All right, you guys, welcome to this week's episode of the Temple of Hoop podcast. I'm your co-host, Coach Maples, aka J Mapes, here as always with Kings, Brother Kings. Is the microphone checked?
Dude, I mean, it looks like it's good now. Let me know.
Yeah, we good. We hear you loud and clear over here. Yeah, we got about 10 tweets, messages talking about the mic level. So we appreciate that feedback. We got it right. We finna get y'all straight. You good though?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm good. Does it sound good?
I'm talking about in life, aside from the microphone, in life. You good?
Life is good, man. Life is solid, man. We doing better. Football's not going good, but maybe.
I told you, man, I'm on sabbatical until December 26th, man, for my mental health, man. Okay, I told you, I got Cowboys, Dak, Zeke, Coop, CD. It's all muted on the timeline, man.
Yeah,
all
y'all got that those injuries though, so
I can't. It's all muted. I can't even. I don't even see it. So,
They coming for your pack, man. Just like they coming for me.
Right. So, all right. Well, let's start with obviously the biggest story in the NBA right now. Steph is approaching the all-time 3-point record. There's been a little bit of a debate around whether he's pressing. Last six games, he gets close, 33% shooting on 21 field goal attempts. He's taking 14 threes a game, kind of hit a snag. I think a lot of the Sixers game was, you know, Matisse putting them clamps on you, boy. That's probably the best I've seen somebody defend Curry in a while on and off the ball. But what do you make of this as, you know, Steph's play as he's approaching a three-point record?
I think he's really trying to force it. It's been like a couple of games where people have looked at his shot chart and it's literally been either all threes or 90% threes or something like some crazy number. Like he's really trying to go for that record. It's affecting his play style. And as a result, it's affecting the team. I think he needs to settle down, just calm down and just play regular style of hoop and let it come to him. I think he's trying too hard for that record.
Yeah, I think he's too dynamic of a player to have a Duncan Robinson type shot chart. That's kind of wild to me. It just he's elite at all three levels. A lot of people are talking about he's maybe slowing down or not slowing down, but possibly not being as aggressive to the rack or off the dribble because he's not getting the foul calls this year. But I just think he's too dynamic and too good.
I mean, who's getting the foul calls?
Right.
Like, I don't think there's any one player who's getting a lot of foul calls this year. Honestly, like, have you seen anybody talk about one guy getting a lot?
I got to say this. Your Naija bro, Embiid, he might be a generational grifter, man, because that man's still at 10 free throw attempts a game.
He's massive, but he's also a power player, so he attracts contact.
That's true.
Too.
That's true. But that man's still sitting at 10 free throw attempts a game. It's kind of amazing to me, even with all the changes. So, yeah, that might be it. So, tied to this situation, you know, they interview Ray Allen on the Dan Patrick Show. He caused a lot of uproar. I think I kind of understood it, but the wording of it was kind of, you know. Those light years and Steph gang is different. They feel he's been slighted. So when Dan Patrick said, asked Ray Allen, was he the best shooter? Or Steph's about to be the best shooter. Ray Allen was like, nah, you can still call me that. How do you think Ray, or what do you think Ray meant by that? And do you think that's kind of valid?
I think Ray was basically just having confidence in himself. I think he looks at it from the perspective that he played in an era where they didn't emphasize shooting a lot of threes. He was also, you know, a lot of people don't know, early Ray was also getting to the cup.
Three levels. Mid-range.
He was very dynamic as a young player. So I think in his mind, it's like, man, if I came up in this era with these spacing principles, if I was allowed to take 12 threes a game every year, you know what I mean? I would be right there. And you know what I mean? It's like for a guy who's as good as he was shooting, as clutch as he was shooting, why should he not feel that way? You know what I mean? It's like, why should he feel like he's not as good? It's like when some people feel, some all-timers feel like they're better than LeBron, et cetera. It's like, why would somebody not feel that way if they were that good? Like, there's that time. Like, remember, I remember watching an old school thing in the 90s about Wilt, and Wilt was talking about the best players of all time. He said, yeah, Jordan is great, but so you also have to remember he's playing in a different time than me. Russell played, you know, and he started talking about how him and Russell were in this specific era, and talk about how you got to understand how we impacted the game and how great we were, and we could have still did the same things today. Like, every all-timer is going to feel like that, and I think people need to stop looking at it like these are all-time great players who played in the game at the highest level. They're not fans. You know what I mean? Like, they're not fans of these guys. These are their peers.
Yeah, I think Kenny Smith talked about this a few times on Inside the NBA. He's like, what separates all-timers from the rest of everybody else is delusion. Like, they really think that nobody on earth can mess with them. And that, like, that's really the attitude that they come with. So I get that too. I remember even like Karl Malone during the Last Dance. And then he was like, y'all talking about Mike a lot, but you know, I was an MF too. Y'all better recognize. So it was like just little stuff like that where you could tell guys were like, they salivate, or that you could tell they even pondered, like, if I could play today, well, you know how OGs are, just even in all aspects of life, not just sports. So it kind of is what it is.
Right. I mean, when any OG who was elite at their craft, when they see the next up and coming player, you know, next up and coming person, they're gonna show their respect, but they're not gonna downplay themselves.
I've never heard. Very rarely have I heard a OG who was near the top or considered the best of the game be like, "Hey, he's better than I was." Like, you never hear that. So I think there's something to that. But what they get me thinking, like, man, if Ray's one of those players where if he gets drafted 10 years later and plays in this era, the conversations about him as an all-timer may be different. You know what I'm saying? Because it's just this era is completely, absolutely, completely conducive to his skill set.
I mean, look, he had the shot.
Right.
He had the – I mean, like, are people going to say he didn't have the ability? He just didn't get the volume up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And even though he's second all-time in threes made, and he's at 40% flat for his career, which is elite for the
And he played in the dead ball era.
Right.
Again, people need to understand, as great as Curry is, he's just about to pass up Ray Allen. You know what I mean? With the amount of volume Curry has taken every year, he's just about to pass up Ray Allen. And Ray Allen did what Curry did at 40%. Like, people are talking about you know what I mean? I honestly have to, because we've always had this assumption that Klay Thompson's second best shooter. I don't even know. I think that's on us. I don't even know if you can put him above Ray, too, if we're really looking at it. If we really look at the play styles, right, and how these guys have played, like, Ray Allen, really, we need to really stop and think about the eras these people played in. Like, yeah, Ray Allen is second all-time in threes with 40%. That's incredible.
Yeah, I think the off-the-dribble aspect makes it a different – Curry is, I think, clear-cut because it's off-the-dribble and spot-up, right? So it's everything. But talking Clay, I think you got to factor in the off-the-dribble stuff for Ray. Like, it's funny, like, Milwaukee Ray, like, would really get busy off-the-dribble. And people just remember the ball Miami and Celtics Ray, who was spotting up and playing in the system. So that's interesting what they choose to see.
I mean, again, give it to Ray Allen. He still got the volume up even in the dead ball. He was getting up 8-7 a game, right, from three. Like, he was that. He was something people ain't never saw before when he came out. He played how good he was from three. So put him in this era. Whew.
I always think about what certain guy. I think like Ray and Reggie are the main two. Like, if they were today, were you encouraged to take threes? I wonder what they, you know, because Reggie's third all time. You know, Ray passed him. So I always think that what it would look like if those guys were encouraged to shoot a bunch, you know, double digit threes per game, right? And offense was designed around that, how things would have looked for those two. So, you know, just something interesting to think about. Somewhat tied to Steph. Steph, obviously, one of the top three candidates for MVP. We got to talk about Jokic, man. We got to. So, this dude, 27-14-7 on 58% shooting, 37% from three, 75% from the line. The last seven games, the Nuggets are a +189 when he's on, -188 when he's off the floor. He leads the NBA by a wide margin. He has his individual net rating is +29.1, which is absolutely dominant when he's on. Giannis is in a distant second at 22.5. So it's like, and here's the thing, like, we've always, I think me and you have had similar standards when, you know, passing out this, is he the best player crown? Like, has there been playoff success? Has it been sustained? You know, what was the situation around it? I think it's weird with Jokic because you can tell he belongs in the conversation.
Absolutely.
But the playoff success is like, we just have, he's never been, he made it to the conference finals. I made the conference finals once. You made the conference finals once.
I'll give it to him. He's been in the second round in the Western Conference every single time he's been there.
That's right.
You know, the first time he went there, they beat the Spurs. They pushed the Blazers 7. Then he beat Kawhi. It came back. And then last year, you know, with his guys out, he still got another first round win against Dame again. So he's beaten some big names. I think Jokic is one of those talents. It's going to be weird. We're going to be in a parody. I think he's one of those talents. It's going to all fall in place for him. I can easily see Jokic winning a championship in the NBA. Like I can truly see that. He's a very physical three-level scoring big. It's actually right. It's weird how it's what type of archetype he is.
We've never seen him before.
We really have not, because he's very, very, very – I mean, he's one of the best passers in the league right. At any position, period, point blank, at any position.
Because it's like Bill Walton's passing, right? It's like Dirk shooting.
And then he has that his physical style kind of reminds me of like Z-Bo.
That's what I'm saying, right? So he's just a hybrid of all these great bigs we've seen put it all together. Yeah,
he's like very nimble on his feet, but he's very tough. You know what I mean? It's hard to move him off his block. He's very physical, very strong. He has good footwork, has great touch like Dirk. And he has, you know, and he's just very cerebral. So, man, I really think once the Nuggets get healthy, man, it's going to be tough to stop this,
That team has – it's a shame because this year I think the parity is where it hasn't been in a long time. I think it's a few teams I can probably think. But they got over $250 million on IR, like, for the season. He might be have the roughest situation as far as what team success will bring his individual abilities, but man, his ability to control a game from the center spot. And this is all due respect to all the great. I'm not saying he's better than these greats from the past, you know, the Shaqs, the Akeems, Wilt, Kareem, you know, those type of guys. But I just don't remember any of them controlling a game deliberately from the center spot like that. The best I can think of is Shaq. Shaq would just eat up the tempo of a game. He'll slow down. Shaq would slow down the whole game because you have to foul him every time. Or it's a dunk. But I mean, like, deliberately, I'm controlling this game as a point center and doing what I want. I don't think we've ever seen that before.
Yeah, I think with Tim Duncan, he was able to do so in his early days on the low block with it.
True.
Fair. Bank shot, then defensively. I think also, like you said, Shaq offensively was just able to just draw everybody in with his inside gravity. And then you had Hakeem as well with his footwork on the block. Slow the tempo down, destroy his one-on-one, be able to pass out there, and then also take over the game defense. I think that's the type of, you know, but you look at who we just named.
Right, that's
Look at who we just named. You know what I mean? Tim right. Duncan, Shaquille O'Neal, and Hakeem Olajuwon. Those are some of the greatest players to ever play basketball. But that's the type of names we're bringing up when we're talking about who Jokic is like, though. This is great company, man. I'm very excited for the big man in the NBA today, man. I'm super excited. And, you know, we have the young guy Mobley just completely turned around the Cleveland Cavaliers. Not obviously not on his own, but with his other fellow big man, too, Jared Allen. So, I'm loving the NBA. I'm loving the way hoop is being played right now.
I know you like the big man.
We had this era, man, where it was just so many guard-centric things and so many perimeter-oriented stuff. You can have, like, the Hardens just come and win 60 games with it. He can just get to the line, control the whole game the whole time, get any foul he wants, and chuck up a bunch of threes and score out volume, right? Volume from threes, volume from free throws. But you don't have that anymore, right? They're letting the big men play now. The big men have also caught up the talent-wise and athletic-wise and archetype-wise. So Jokic, man, I really believe Jokic can win a chip. And to me, it speaks volumes to see him play the way he is. He has every excuse in the world. MPJ is out. Murray's out. But you know what? He said, you know what?
Jump on my back.
I'm playing for me. You know what I mean? Like, this is my legacy. How do I want to be remembered? I have nothing but respect for guys who come out there and you know they want to be the best. You know what I mean? And that's the type of thing we've criticized a certain somebody, you know, on a certain team for. Like, you want guys who want to come out there and prove to you every night, nah, I'm one of the best in this league. Like, it's a certain special type of mentality. And I remember Jokic said something early on in his career, and I was like, man, this guy, he's bold, but I don't know if he's that good. When he was talking to Shaq, he was like, and I think it was year three when this is the Nuggets had that breakout. I think it was the last year, KD's last year in Golden State. He was talking to Shaq. He said, Shaq, you know, I don't think I could cover you, but I know for sure you can't cover me. And I was like, man, who this guy talk? I'm like, who is this dude? Nikola Jokic. I'm like, you okay, but don't be talking like that to Shaq. But hey, he wasn't lying. He wasn't lying, boy. He was not lying. And Jokic is the truth. He has the mentality. And I have nothing but respect for Jokic playing that.
So rank him right now, December 12th, 2021. He is the blank best player in the NBA right now before we move on.
Right now. Right now, Nikola Jokic is playing like the best player in the NBA. That's what it is.
Okay.
He's playing like the best player in the NBA. I have to give it up to him. Is he the best? I don't know, but he's playing like he's the best.
Right. The sustainability has to come next. So we got Kings on wax. All right. So speaking about Kings was talking about bigs, the Pacers finally. This is crazy. We actually recorded an episode talking about the Pacers. What are they doing? They just blow the whole thing up. Right. According to Woj, they're finally taking calls on Sabonis, Turner, and LeVert. They can't trade Brogdon. He just signed an extension, so he can't be moving to the offseason. Man, so we obviously agree with them breaking it up. We talked about it. Let's talk Miles Turner because obviously it was leaked to the Lakers about being interested in Miles Turner. There's obviously stuff to talk about as far as compensation and how they make salaries match and all that. But would you like that fit?
For the Lakers, Miles Turner?
Yeah.
I think it's a great fit because I'm just not sure how they can get a wing that they need to get to to make that championship run. I think for the Lakers, with the only assets available to them, they have to make a decision come at the deadline. It's either you go all in for a wing of high quality or you get a big that you can actually play, that can actually make AD be able to play at the four. And you're able to not lose any versatility offensively or defensively. So for them, it's really, we need to get a Miles Turner. Like really only Miles Turner, that's the only big they're able to do that can fit that. Or we get, you know, try and shoot for a Jeremy Grant, Harrison Barnes. You know, Atlanta has a whole ton of wings. People are saying that they might want to move off Reddish. I don't know if that's a real possibility, but, you know, I don't think it is. But, you know, Atlanta has a whole bunch of wings. I don't know if they're up for sale or anything like that. But, you know, it's one of those things where they have to see, can we call up Atlanta and see if they have any wings on the block? Can we get Jeremy Grant? Can we get Harrison Barnes, or can we get Miles Turner? I think those are the top choices I think they have at the deadline. I think Miles Turner fits because he can shoot the three. He's a very great rim protector. He's mobile on his feet. He's going to help space the floor offensively as well as help them defensively, give them that anchor that's going to mostly protect Russ, also take pressure off Braun and let AD do be his best as a help side rim protector as well as help. Allow AD to focus more energy on being a versatile defender as opposed to also being an anchor as well. So I think he works really well for the team. And then what it also does is that it takes off less pressure on Ariza to come in and be a savior of the team as well. So, like I said, either Miles Turner or one of those quality wings and Grant, Barnes, or off Atlanta, whether it's Bogey or whether it's Reddish, those I think are the choices that's going to really take LA over the top. And if you can sneak in Holiday in that Indiana trade by offering some of those seconds Washington sent you, that would be another great move to shore up that two spot. Cause I think that's going to be another thing for them to try.
Yeah. It's just tough. Over. And it's just tough. You got to see, cause you know, the Lakers they're worried about adding more salary, which is why they, you know, didn't re-sign certain guys. That's the only thing you got to consider, but I do like the idea, but moving off seconds, just taking in salary, I don't know if they're going to, you know, whoo.
I mean, hey, like I told people, you got to pay to win. if you want to win, you got to make your mind up, bro.
That's true. That's true.
You got to make your mind up. Do you want to win or not?
Yeah. I mean, as far as Turner, for me, I think me and you were on the same page. We don't love the too big thing. But my thing was, if Vogel is going to lean into it and AD is going to insist that he's a four, you might as well put the best version of it out there, which is a center that can shoot, who can also defend and, you know, help with AD's load on both ends. Turner can help with the roaming, the shot blocking. He's not a great rebounder, but I did love about when I was looking up at Turner's Turner's profile on B-Ball Index, he's in the 97th percentile as a role man. And that only gets better with Russ and LeBron initiating it.
And I think his versatility being able to shoot also helps open right. that up. Too,
exactly, so. Exactly. He's going to get way more respect.
You know, people keep telling me, you know, and I want to talk about that tweet that people try to raise on me on. Miles turned the holiday. People keep telling me about what the Lakers can and can't do. Well, let me tell you guys something first of all, because I think you guys forgot how the NBA's ran in 2021. Okay, first of all, GMs love first round draft picks. Like that should be common sense at this point.
It's cost controlled. That's the
cost control. It's cost control asset, keeps your job there because now you're saying, hey, I'm securing picks for the future. You know, we can maybe hit a home run, especially with the Lakers 2027 picks. Like, hey, we don't know how AD is going to be in 2027. They might be a horrible team. You know, LeBron's going to retire in like the next 3-4 years. So it's like Russ is going to be gone. Who knows who they sign after that? So you know what I mean? It's like that's a good pick because it's way down the line. It's like they might be terrible. You know what I mean? Because they were terrible before. They might be again once the old star falls off. Right. And then it's like THT is a 21-year-old raw talent that you can develop. And the key thing, he's in a cost-controlled contract. Yeah. 21 years old on a 4-year, $40 million deal. Like, bro, that is what GMs live for.
You know what I mean? Was it 330 or 440?
I don't want to say. It might be 440 or 330, but it's 10 years per, and he's 21 years old. This is what GMs live for. Young guys you can develop that don't cost you much. This is the type of asset they always value. They always overvalue these assets. And let me tell you guys something about Miles Turner. We love him as a role guy. We love him as his archetype. I'm not sure if GMs love this guy.
I know, right? It's kind of crazy.
He's been on the trade block. I kid you not. I swear, I feel like he's been on the trade block for 3 years. Like for 3 seasons, he's been on this trade block and nobody has budged. I think the closest was Boston, right, trying to send him there on the signing tee, and they completely forgot and said, forget this, and sent him to Charlotte.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I don't know. I don't know what it is with GMs. I don't know if it's the contract for his archetype, but they do not value Miles Turner enough to give up any assets for him. And it's like there's been many teams that needed a big.
I've heard from people who talk to people that his attitude isn't the greatest.
I've heard some of that too.
So that's
for Indiana as well.
That's what I heard.
He did come out and say he wanted to be featured.
You know what? You know what? I was going to leave. That doesn't bother me. Because
bother me, but I'm saying it might bother GMs.
That's true. That's true. But that doesn't
matter. If they see him as a certain vision and they see the money he's making, the way he's talking, they're like, yeah, we don't want this. You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing. It's like teams who need a big, do they want to invest that much capital in Miles Turner? The Lakers would willingly do that because they love bigs. That's just because of AD. But most teams would not be willing to do that. So it's like been on the block for so long now. Nobody's made a move. Like this guy is not somebody who's ungettable. Like you know what I mean? If he was that type of player, he would have been traded a long time ago. Because I swear, Indiana has been trying to trade him ever since Sabonis got on the scene. They've been trying to move Miles. Like they've been trying to move Miles.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. Sabonis. And LeVert. So where do you think teams would be interested in Sabonis and LeVert? Obviously, my first thing for Sabonis, I know Dallas is really looking. Well, Porzingis is playing out of his mind this year, so I don't know about Dallas. But I know that Portland was also in on Turner. They need another. They're trying to get more defensive-minded with Billups. They're still 29th. Dallas possibly as far as getting you know, maybe in on LeVert, but they really want some more help for Luka. So, what would you like to see? I know we're both not as high on him as everybody else because the numbers look gaudy, but we've both seen him enough to be like, this is not moving me like that, or moving as far as a contender or helping a deep playoff team. It's not moving us to that level. Mm-hmm. So, what do you think Sabonis is a good fit or something realistic for him? that you think he's a good fit?
He could be a better Nurk for Portland. I can definitely see that. He could help out Sack. Mm-hmm. I could also see that. On the East, you know, I have all the teams that, you know, that are, need a big. He could definitely help out Boston. I definitely think he could help out the because the Celtics, not only they lack size, they lack playmaking. So I think he can come in and fill in both. Well, I think that's probably the best playoff team he could help off the jump, because they also have great perimeter defense, Smart, Schroeder, Tatum, Jaylen Brown. So I think he can come in and fit in right away with the Celtics. So I actually think that's the best destination for Sabonis. As far as LeVert, like Dallas, I think is the key. You get the wing defender as well, the perimeter scorer that could play off the playmaker and Luka, but can also go one-on-one and take Luka's help spell Luka off from the scoring load. And he could just come in and fit in right away. I think Dallas is a big-time spot for LeVert, where he will get his looks as well as be able to contribute towards winning.
Right.
And take off pressure off the star. Oh, I mean, also LeVert would obviously help out the Lakers, but LeVert is actually a coveted player.
That's what I was saying.
Teams will try to trade for him, so I'm not – That's not somebody I'm looking at.
Right. And speaking of trades, moving on. So Woj out the blue reported that Steam is picking up on a Ben Simmons move as far as trading. He said there are a bunch of 2 and 3 team trade deals getting discussed to try to move him. But the Sixers' ultimate goal is to land a top 25 player. My question for you, I don't know how similar we feel on Simmons, but how realistic do you think it is for Philly to try to push for a top 25 player in return for Ben Simmons?
Well, who do they consider top 25?
That's also a fair question. You know what I mean?
Who do you consider top 25? Is it Jaylen Brown? You know what I mean? Like who do you consider CJ McCollum top 25 or something? Like, because you're not going to get Dame. You know what I mean? You're not going to get a Jason Tatum type. You're not going to get a Devin Booker or Donovan Mitchell.
Do you like that Ben Simmons for Jaylen Brown trade?
Not really.
See, that's what I was asking for.
And I say not really because it's going to be weird, because they really need – I think they really just need a real big man. You know what I mean? They need to stop stockpiling these power wings, right? Like, Ben Simmons is going to come in. He's going to improve their defense. He's going to improve their playmaking. But now you just lost your second-best scorer who opens up your offense from the perimeter, right? And Ben Simmons is not going to feel that. So now you put more pressure on Jason Tatum to score better. But maybe Ben Simmons opens his game up
more, right?
Because, you know, he's setting him up better. But like I said, I really feel like Sabonis fits that better for them, in the sense that he would be a big that could rebound, box out, and then he's also going to be able to play make to get those guys open from getting him touches. But I feel like Ben Simmons is probably – you people argue for Ben Simmons being better in that he's a pace pusher as well. He can actually control the ball from the perimeter, which I think will take pressure off these other guards who play off ball more. But yeah, it's going to be tough because you're going to have to – you're going to lose a scoring void with Jaylen Brown, and you're going to basically be asking Schroeder and Jason Tatum to make that up. So that's really what it comes down to.
My thing with Ben is there's probably – honestly, just looking at him, being all jokes aside, the stuff I've said, there's probably like 15 teams at least that he makes better by acquiring him in the regular season.
Right.
The issue is the last 2 years – we've seen what it looks like in the playoffs when that second round, they hone in on him or they take away what he wants to do. And he's just not the most, he's not the most aggressive guy. I think I hate throwing the word choke around, but that's kind of what it was last year against Atlanta. He just was not the moment overwhelmed him. Like, I understand playing bad, like guys miss shots, guys make bad decisions, but to not even step out on that ledge and attempt to throw yourself into the mix, like, it was clearly the moment was too big for him. So what team with that on the tape the last 2 years, you know, multiple scoring playoff, scoreless playoff games, like, what team is going to throw a lot of assets at that who has championship, you know, aspirations. That's why I said Portland, because I'm kind of with John Rivers here. Shout out John. I don't think Portland want to win. They want to keep Dame happy and sell tickets. So
they don't. That's been proven. But hey, shout out John Rivers. He did say, you know, selling tickets make sure the product is good. So I get that with Portland, but I think Ben Simmons, the two best teams for him. You know, one of them, I'll go ahead and say the non-championship team, the Wolves. I think Ben Simmons needs to go to a team that has a scoring, three-point shooting center and guards that can shoot and play off his playmaking, that need his playmaking. The Wolves are one, but this is the championship team that I think they need to make a serious look at, and it's a match made in heaven, I think, for him. The Nuggets. Huh. I think the Nuggets need to get their picks, take Michael Porter Jr., and go to Philly and say, look, you need a wing scorer, Queen Heat, a power wing defender. Let's talk. Huh. Let's talk. Let's talk.
I think they got to waive a bunch because he's injured. You have to waive the physical and stuff. And I think there's a lot of stuff that has to happen. So that's interesting. If Porter was healthy, that's something I look at. Also, the Nuggets gave a bunch of their picks to get Aaron Gordon. So that's the other thing you got to look at. So we'll see what happens with that. But I think Portland is the most, because I'm looking at Philly. I've watched them. When Embiid plays, they're a contending team, like just how it looks on the eye test.
Right.
If they add somebody, I know they're hunting for a top 25 player, but if you can even add CJ McCollum to that.
Right.
You know, I think it takes them to another level. Just a guy who's shown he can compete in big games. In the past, a veteran, but I understand you put a lot of stock in the Simmons. He was part of the big turnaround. I understand why they want a lot from him. I just don't know if it's realistic about the haul they're trying to get.
They should have took that Brogdon deal that was actually reportedly.
Yeah, I thought that would have been perfect for what they do.
I think they look back and it's like, man, we should have took that trade.
Right. I think you wonder if Morey isn't overplaying his hand, but you know he's been at this for a while.
I knew he would. They got too emotional, man. Once it got emotional, I was like, this is going to end bad for them. They have to move him because their team is too good to not get nothing in return. It's one of those things that got way too emotional. It's like the Nets are doing the same thing. They're rolling the dice on Kyrie, hoping, praying to God that he changes his mind and gets that vaccine. It's one of those same things, like. It's tough, man. It's really tough. But the thing with the Nets is, like, they kind of have no choice. Whereas the Philly had a choice to get rid of Ben coming in. But Morey wanted to play that game. And it's like, look, bro, you can't win them all. And with the way the league is gone right now, it's like your best bet is to get value from guys.
Right. That's what I think. And I think those teams in the East, you see the Bucks, Dante is coming back. Mm-hmm. Brooke will be back eventually. I think you got to start thinking about, okay, can we beat that team in a 7-game series as constructed? Like, if Kyrie's not going to play, if Ben's not going to play, are we going to beat that team in a 7-game series? And I think the Nets will need to fill Kyrie's void, whether it's with Kyrie, if he takes the shot, or with the trade, they're going to have to fill that void to beat the Nets in a 7-game series, especially if Harden doesn't turn this corner efficiency-wise. So – well, we'll see what happens going forward. Last, kind of sad, Zion, me and Kings both rock with the boy Tough, suffered a setback. His imaging revealed that he had his bone actually taken a little more damage than the last time. They ramped up too hard on the rehab. He's out indefinitely. They're going to check back in a few weeks. That's the first part, the saddest. The other part is a little disappointing. I mean, he's only 21, but obviously, you know how this is. When things get bad, stuff leaks out. So Zion, allegedly, you know, we don't know if it's fact, but people who are tapped in have put this in, skipping his rehab appointments, big no-no, falling asleep in film.
I heard that one from the summer.
Right. Skipping, falling asleep in film, chastising guys on the bench. Man, well, how do we feel about Zion right now? I think we both understand that, that's a generational talent, man, but the intangibles are becoming a little alarming at this point, if we got to be honest.
I mean, you look at his film in college, you look at the motor he had on both ends.
Yes.
That explosiveness, that guy was just not, it's not there. I mean, he came in, he dominated the league offensively inside as a paint monster, but he was slow to put his effort in on defense to be defensively sound. It looks like he's just playing for himself in New Orleans. And that goes back to what, you know, the worst kept secret in the NBA. He just don't, he don't want to be there. Like, CAA has thrown the hints out. CAA runs the destination that people are saying he wants to go to.
Look, I just, the people I've talked to who are tapped in, I know somebody who's tapped in, just, he just really wanted to be a Nick on draft night. Like, he was praying.
Look, man, it's looking like, you know what I mean? It's looking like he's trying to force some things in New Orleans to where he's trying to force their hand to say, look, bro, get me out of here. You know what I mean? And if it comes down to a situation where, you know, New Orleans is bad, and they got that Paolo pick. And hey, look, some stuff is going on behind the scenes.
Yeah,
Zion. There's this kid Paolo who plays the same position. the Pelicans are terrible. So hey, look. Zion's a great player. I think when he goes to the team he wants to play for, we want to see that dominant, crazy force of nature that we saw offensively with New Orleans, as well as both ends in Duke. I think when he's on the team and he's in an environment that he wants to be in, we will see that. But we won't see that in New Orleans, I don't think, until he gets what he wants to get. That's how I feel.
Yeah, that's kind of wild to me, man. I just, you know, obviously, ideally, you would hope that, you know, I don't want to be here. I'm going to make the best of it. I'm going to lock in. I'll see what happens when the contract comes up, boom, boom, boom. But we in the new generation, man. These kids, if they're not where they want to be, they'll pull out all the stops. And I'm not even saying he is. It's just a lot of this is speculation. But New Orleans at this point, what are their options? They're obviously going to put that full max. You know, he made All-Star, so he gets the full max because he's extension eligible after this season. What do you do if you're New Orleans, in your opinion? I think a lot of it, I think what you said rides on if they get that, what pick they get, whether it's, if it's that 1-2 where it's going to be Paolo, Chet, or Hardy, that top three, I think that makes a difference. But what do you do?
I mean, ideally with New Orleans, you want to draft Chet and keep Zion, right? Like, that's what you would want, ideally. Draft Chet, keep Zion, keep Brandon Ingram, build. It's on Zion, bro. When you go to Zion, you offer him the contract extension, you got to see what him and his agent are talking about. You got to see the mood. You got to ask him, do they want to be here? Is this some place they can see themselves staying? Because that extension, once you commit to that, those you locked in for those years. So Zion and his people, if they really don't want to be there, they're not going to come in there, you know, super ecstatic to sign that extension and just want to stay there. So you'll find out in those negotiations when you offer that contract extension, you'll find out what Zion is really feeling and what his people are really feeling. So it's going to come down to him, I think. You know, I think ideally, if you're in New Orleans, you want to keep Zion, you want to draft Chet, and you want to keep Zion, Chet, and Brandon Ingram. That'd be a great trio to build off of going forward. But it's all on Zion, man. It really is.
Yeah, that's what I think. It's just they kind of hands kind of tied. But, I mean, you got to bust a move at some point. That team been rebuilding since, man, it's been a while. But, woo. All right, King, before we get out of here, you want to discuss this right now? Steph kind of plateauing, going down. Jokic rising up. LeBron going crazy the last seven games since he's come back. DeMar DeRozan finally kind of, well, COVID took him out, unfortunately. MVP, obviously KD 51 tonight. I'm sorry. KD and Giannis. Right now, real quick, MVP.
The MVP of the NBA season right now is still Stephen Curry. Still his, but his lead is diminishing. You have KD coming up. KD, I would say, is number two. And then you have, I think you have a somewhat of a tie between Jokic and Giannis for number three. And after that, it's really wide open. I mean, I know Phoenix has a lot of success, but it's more team oriented than it is about one individual guy dominating. Although Devin Booker is playing at all NBA level. But yeah, I really just think right now we're seeing a KD closing ground on Curry, Jokic closing ground on the top three, even though his team isn't good, and Giannis still being dominant like he always is every year since right. he started winning MVP. So that's really the top four. It's going to be an interesting race to see who closes out.
Right. All right, y'all, there we have it. Make sure you follow at his Kings, bro. Myself, JJ Maples, 55 underscore MST. Appreciate you guys tapping in for that feedback last week. We got the mics checked. We good. We back. You should hear this one all the way through. Turn the volume up and down in a whip. It should be a straight ride all the way through. Appreciate all the feedback, all the reviews, even the haters, man. We love you. You feel me?
At the end of the day, you know, you're still getting the views.
That's what I'm saying. That's right. You feel me? You just still contributed to the download number. So appreciate you. But yeah, man, y'all be cool. Be safe. And we are out of here.
Peace, y'all.